Okay, I'm Chairman Brad Holton. I'm going to bring the meeting to order. Time is 1:36. Present is Commissioner Brooks, Commissioner Van Beek. We will be meeting now as the Canyon County Board of Equalization. Idaho law provides that the Board of Equalization must examine and act upon all assessment protests filed with the board in regarding to the assessed value of any property entered on the property rolls and must ensure fair market value. The taxpayer shall have the burden of proof in seeking affirmative relief to establish that the determination of the assessor is deserving of an adjustment, including any determination of assessed value. If you have filed an appeal with the assessor's determination of value for your eligibility for a tax exemption, this is your opportunity to present evidence to the board to demonstrate that the assessor's determination was incorrect. Evidence must include documentation of recent sales of properties comparable to yours. Each taxpayer will have 3 minutes to present their case, unless the board grants you additional time. We expect that all participants be cordial and respectful. If not, the board reserves the right to immediately terminate the hearing, and in such event, the participant will be deemed to have waived their right to present additional testimony. And a written decision will be issued by the board based solely on documentary evidence presented. In order to ensure property values are correct, the county's Board of Commissioners, sitting as the County Board of Equalization, is charged with the responsibility of equalizing value. The charge to the Board of Equalization is found in Idaho Code Section 63-502 is clear and precise. The function of the Board of Equalization shall be confined strictly to assuring that the market value for assessment purposes of property has been found by the assessor. It is hereby made the duty of the Board of Equalization to enforce and compel a proper classification and assessment of all property. The role of the Board of Equalization is to assure uniform market values. In doing so, the board must ensure that it does not compromise value in an effect to either placate the assessor or the taxpayer. To do so creates nothing but unfairness in the system and shifts the burden from one taxpayer to another. It is important to note that ex parte communication, direct communication with the property owner, the assessor, or the assessor's staff during the appeals process is considered unethical. So let's get underway by swearing everybody who came in who would like to present before the board. Everybody that's in the gallery, if your plan was to testify before the board, have you signed in? All right. This is your chance to do so. If you haven't, come up beside the clerk and give her your name.
Roger Craig, Holly Hopkins, Mike Cowan, Katrina Ponce, Tracy Golder, James Polinski, John Cotner, Brian Watt, Tracy Casper, Jeff Bull. If I could have everybody raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you give will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. And for staff, is it correct that we're just starting with the protest 26071 on the Star Road House warehouse? Is that?
Yes.
We agree?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's do that. That contestant that is that would come up.
And I have six copies of this for you guys.
I'm Brian Watt. I'm with Star Road Warehouse, LLC. I work for the parent company of the ownership group. Our protest today is based on the fact that understanding the underwriting has to use market rents, but then it also used a market cap rate, which did not adjust for the difference between market rents and for sale, things like that. So in the second page of your behind the protest, there is a flyer in there for a amalgamated warehouse right next door, and it sets forth kind of what where our protest is based off of. And there's a whole lot of underwriting in here in the big protest, which is it is listed at, its current rents are like 55 cents, and it's listed at 5 3/4 cap, and then it says the market rents on it are 6.5 at a 6.5 cap for market rates to bump it up in the future. So that's the basis for our protest. The three bullet points in this little spreadsheet I put on the front end was to kind of show those specific comments, and then the comps are on the last page of the comps we've pulled from Thornton Oliver Keller of sales that happened in 20, mostly 25, but there was one in 26 and one in 24. And the last part of that was kind of the conclusion, which was the assessor assessed the property at 70 cents market rents. Our market rents are more in the 50 cents range because we have long-term leases. But that rate at a 6.5 cap has a value of $13.6 million. Our number that we asked for was 13.9 for assessment because that would basically be a 5 cap on our current actual income. I know you guys can't consider actual income, but that's where we think that it would not trade below that if we were to put it on the market in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
Chairman, just to clarify, your cap rate's at 6.5%, and the county's proposing a 5.08% cap rate.
They propose a 5.35. The 5.08 is on our their valuation at our actual income.
Okay. And I'm just clarifying, we haven't really dealt with cap rates for a while, but these are inversely proportional rates. So the higher the cap rate, the lower the assessed value. The lower the cap rate, the higher the assessed value.
Correct.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay. I guess we'll move over to staff and have them do their presentation.
Okay, so as I've testified in the past, our income models, we use three approaches to value that the state requires us through IDAPA 350103 Rule 217 says we have to consider the cost approach, the sales comparison approach, and the income approach. We do reconcile with these types of properties typically on an income approach, but in the end, we get audited based on sales price versus assessment for a prior year. So all the sales that occur in 2025, we have to look at what the assessments are for 2025 as well. So state requires that we are at 100% market value. So that means that if our reconciled value based on an income approach, a sales comparison approach, or a cost approach is $100 million, that means that our assessments need to reflect the market, that $100 million sale price. So having said that, probably the easiest way to look at this when we're doing a comparison, again, the income approach has a lot of different math configurations within the equation to reach a value. The best way to look at this is just on a sales comparison, on a price per foot. What do warehouses of similar size, age, quality, location, position in the market, does this warehouse compare to others? And so this is the subject property that we have on the first slide. This is the old Alumiglass plant that's across the street from the Sorrento Cheese Factory. And Amazon is just down the road as well. Here's an aerial view of it. One thing to note on this property, it's very well situated. As you know, there's going to be two I-84 on-ramps once Highway 16 is completed later on this year. So this has become a very desirable area. The other thing that this one has that's very unique to this property and is extremely valuable, at least in sales that I've analyzed in past years, is it also has a access to a railroad spur that actually abuts the subject property, and they actively use that railroad spur. So it has an advantage that others do not. This is a concrete tilt-up property. Those things, the way that these are built with also the concrete roof structure, I've seen these things last for over 100 years without a lot of issues. Of course, you've always got to replace the roofing on it. This one's been very well maintained. It has two tenants in it currently. If we can go to the next slide. Just another aerial where it sits. You can see the Highway 16 on the right-hand side there that's going in. Next slide. Next slide. That's an interior view of it. I think that's the rotomolding that's in there.
Yeah, that's Centennial Plastics.
And then the next one is, I think that's Edmark that's in that side of it, that they're using it for auto repair and or auto body. Next slide. So this is a building, when we're looking at it on the square footage, total square footage of the building, we're using 118,400 square feet for the total building, but we're not including this 2,100 square foot warehouse. It is being used, but it's, as you can see, it's in rough shape, and it's, the market's not really going to notice this too much.
Yeah, it's not on a foundation or anything.
Not on a foundation, exactly. So this has not been included. So what this is, this next slide, and you have a copy of this. This is on a price per square foot basis when you want to look at the comparables. So what I've done is I've taken what's highlighted in the green are all the comps that Brian has presented in his packet. The comps that are below that are the augmented comps that we also have besides the ones that were presented in his packet. If you look on it on our price per square foot, I mean, we have 22 comps there of larger warehouses of all shapes and sizes, but mostly I was trying to pick the ones that were over 40,000 square feet. We're not going to be comparing this to a 2,000 square foot warehouse, of course. And looking at it from a price per square foot, the current assessment is at $129 per square foot. If you look at the average of the total data set, we're looking at $171 per square foot. If you're looking at just the comps that Brian presented in his packet, you're looking at $156 per square foot. We're well below what the comps are showing. These are unadjusted comps. The only adjustments that I made were for a couple of sales that I know there was a lot of deferred maintenance, and I had some actual costs that were presented to some of these properties that had some severe, their older properties that had severe maintenance issues that they had to address immediately after the sale to make it somewhat comparable to the subject property. So I did adjust those couple sales. But other than that, this is just raw data that's out there. In my opinion, there's no evidence to show that we're over-assessed based on this data set and what's been presented.
Okay. Questions, comments?
Yep. Mike, can you tell me again, so his request is $117 a square foot, and it's currently assessed at $129. So there's a $12 square foot difference in what? Okay, thanks. And for the record, his documentation talks about, I wanted you to address that maybe in the IDAPA rules on point two on the basis of protest. So do you take into consideration the market lease rates versus the rents that are being paid on long-term agreements?
I appreciate that question, Commissioner. If we can go to slide, let's see here, is that the one I want? Let's go to the next slide. So this is the IDAPA 350103, Rule 217. The rules pertain to market value for assessors. It says, that's highlighted there, it says the assessor will value the entire fee simple interest of the property. Fee simple implies market rents and market vacancies and market parameters versus actual in place. Lease fee is actually a term that is used for what is, if something is encumbered by a lease, whether or not it's 20 years old or 1 year old, that is considered a lease fee. And so we're required to value the fee simple. In item number 4 down there at the bottom, it says in determining value, the income approach to value used in appraisal procedures, methods, and techniques to determine market value for assessment purposes of income-producing properties must use market rent, not contract rent. So that hopefully answers your question.
I think so. Thank you. I'll just follow that up with a statement. Maybe you can add to it. But on businesses that make contractual agreements on year over year, they could potentially be behind market rent prices. And then that would affect the cap rate that he's
talking about. Yeah. So in the instance of this, those tenants have 10-year leases. And so they were entered in pre-COVID before rates jumped. So they're kind of locked in for long terms for below market rents.
Yeah.
What it is.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Chairman, and on that, these are a little bit more complicated when we're talking about commercial square feet and long-term lease rates and cap rates, but I would not be able to adjust this value based on what the assessors presented for the market rates versus the locked-in long-term. You do have the opportunity to appeal to the Board of Tax at the state level, but I don't have a way to go based on the IDAPA rules with what Mr. Cowan's presented today and what the argument is for that. So I would be in favor of upholding the assessor's value.
I would have to concur. You made a good presentation. I can see your point. I'd be frustrated where you're at too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I appreciate you doing such a professional job in presenting and with your documentation. I agree with Commissioner Van Beek. I'm kind of stuck with the rules, and this isn't your last stop of being rejected. So,
no.
Commissioner Brooks?
Chairman, I move that the board upholds the assessor's value in protest number 26071 on pin 304050000 on site located at 16265 Star Road in Nampa.
I second.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you guys for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Okay. Next protestant up is 26083 Wilbur Ellis Company. Is there a representative for them here?
I was received an email. I think I CC'd Jen in on this that they said that they were not going to be present for this hearing.
Okay.
That they wanted the information that they provided the board to stand on its own.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And Chairman, in the absence of a presentation, I would still uphold the assessor's value. I wouldn't dismiss it and allow them to go to the BTA if they would like to.
Commissioner Briggs?
I tend to agree, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I would concur.
Chairman, I move that the board upholds the assessor's valuation on protest number 26083, pin number 36369000-0 on site located at 20471 Pinto Road in Caldwell, and allow them to move to the BTA if they so choose.
I second.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay. Next protestant is 26078, if they would come up front, Hippolyta, or however it's supposed to be pronounced. I've heard a variance in the last few months.
Hippolyta.
All right.
May I have our bench?
Sure.
And Chairman, can I ask a question on legal before we start this protest? The county is currently in litigation on prior years of assessment values for Hippolyta. And so therefore, I would submit that I would make the suggestion we pass this up to BTA, given that we're in litigation already.
I believe that's what the assessor's office was already planning on suggesting as well.
Okay.
But I think Mr. Polyansky can give his time if you'd let him.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose that would make it we could expedite the hearing.
So, yeah, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So is that, I'll just ask for a verbal on the record, if that's okay, Chairman, from our Mike Cowan on that.
Yes.
So just uphold the request and allow them to go to BTA.
If that's Mr. Polyansky's wish, he came all the way from Seattle, so I don't want to.
That'll be fine.
Okay. And I do want to be respectful of your time and the fact that they've been here. And if you want to, but it's difficult where we're in active litigation.
Noted. Thank you.
All right. Take note that the applicant is.
Okay. Chairman, I move that the board upholds the valuation from the assessor's office on protest number 26078 on PIN 304810120 for property located at 5295 East Franklin Road in Nampa. The presenter from Hippolyta has agreed that because we're in active litigation, this will pass up to the BTA at the state level.
Very good. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming.
That was a motion?
Yes.
Second.
All right. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. And we had a continued item from yesterday. For a bit of housekeeping, we discussed one of these protestant numbers, and it was disqualified because of change of ownership. We did not make an official motion on that. Let's start with that before we continue with our discussion.
Okay. Chairman, regarding the continued protest evaluation for Mr. Cotner's property on protest number 26020, PIN number 329791660, property located at 14263 Red River Avenue. Mr. Cotner's confirmed that he no longer owns this. It's now owned by Larry Richardson. So I move that we exclude this protest evaluation from the record.
I second.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, so you still stand on the other protest that you have brought forward. I think the way I understood that we had left it yesterday was the assessor's office was going to come back with additional documentation showing like or similar value for the board to review on existing properties that have been built and what your assessment is on those existing land values.
Yes, sir. And it was our first off, I mean, we were just handed that appraisal yesterday, as you guys were.
Right.
And we wanted to do a little research on that also.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Are you prepared to present?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I
Commissioner, you also have these copies in front of you?
Just received them, yes.
Me too. All right. Okay.
You want me to start?
Sure.
Okay.
I kind of jumped into this today, so I don't know the entire history, but from what's been conveyed to me, I was able to look at the appraisal report that was provided along with a couple of the deeds, warranty deeds that were filed on the a couple of properties that were sold as a part of the appraisal report. There's a couple things that I noticed. I review thousands of appraisals in my career. We are looking for appraisals that meet the standard both of the fee simple estate, which we just went through in our prior hearing here. And that's dictated on that first handout that I gave you. On page 14, again, this is a citing from IDAPA 350103 that we are to value the entire fee simple interest in a property. That means the entire bundle of rights. And so what that means is to have a sale that is in fee simple, it cannot have encumbrances
that restrict the ability to resell, to use your property, sell the property,
give that property away. Basically, you're able to do everything with that property without needed restrictions. And that's not what I found in the warranty deeds. It showed that there were some restrictions on being able to resell the property. So it wasn't a full bundle of rights. Well, what does that mean in the appraisal world when you're looking at market value and fee simple here? Page 2 of that is kind of a, that's right behind that IDAPA 217 shows the bundle of rights, and I have them circled, the ones that, according to the warranty deed, there's some deed restrictions that reduce those first two rights. So what does USPAP say, and what does the Appraisal Institute say on how you're supposed to deal with those? Are they actual comparable properties and comparable sales that you can use in a fee simple appraisal? The next page will show you down at the bottom. This is of the real estate, appraisal of real estate. This is put a publication that's an authoritative treatise. This is the 16th edition. It's the latest edition of that document. Down at the bottom it says, some sale contracts call for a sale of real property rights that add deed restrictions or other forms of limitation on the purchaser or on future users of the property. That sort of title or use limitation which causes the real property rights conveyed to be less than fee simple must be addressed in the analysis. If it is not possible to analyze the effect on the value, the transaction may be less useful for direct market comparison. In my view, it is not a valid sale to use sales of deed-restricted properties, which it appears is going on in this particular subdivision. It also states further in USPAP, which is also cited on the last page of the appraisal report that you guys have in front of you, and this is almost verbatim of what is listed on the appraisal report, is what's highlighted down there, which market value means the most probable price in which a property should bring in a competitive and open market under all conditions requisite to a fair sale. Basically, an open market in the appraisal world means that it's open to all market participants to be able to buy and sell, which means typically these properties are listed. It doesn't mean that necessarily all properties that transact into the market have to be listed. Certainly don't have to be listed in MLS as noted in the appraisal report, but they have to be available to the open market. And the fact that these properties are restricted apparently from, correct me if I'm wrong, to only a handful of people that can buy it, and then they cannot transfer it. They cannot purchase the property and then turn around and sell it again for a profit. This takes away the open market concept
that is required for a market transaction to exist.
So for that reason, at least the first three comparables in the appraisal report, which are in the subject property, they're encumbered with deed restrictions, which, comps 1, 2, and 3.
So I don't know how this appraisal can be a valid indication of market when that's what you're restricting it to.
Chairman, I have a question. In your evaluation, when we were yesterday, when we continued this hearing, there was an ask by the board to find a comparable prototype. So are you saying, with the information that you do or don't have, that you did not find another custom subdivision that had deed restrictions that you could make a comparison to?
So this is where my involvement in this case is kind of limited to. And you bring up a good point. When you are looking at deed restricted properties and transactions, they may or may not reflect market. But what you have to do is you do have to look outside of those particular sales and do paired sales analysis with other comparable properties, similar location, similar size, similar desirability, demand in the market, and compare and contrast to see if these sales are actually indicative of market. And so I believe that Holly actually looked at some other sales. I think there was a 2-mile radius that was dictated yesterday. Again, that's outside my involvement in this and expertise, so I'll let Holly address that.
Okay, yeah, and just wanting to bring to light as well in the appraisal report, not only the first three comps, but the comps 4 through 6 were 8 miles away from the subject. So just wanted to reiterate, because you had said that you wanted comps within 2 miles, so he only had his subdivision and then everything else was 8 miles away. And that's kind of why we had to extend out, because these are nicer, bigger lots. They are a little bit harder to find, so they're, sometimes we have to go a larger radius. So I just wanted to bring that to light, as well as I wanted to ask the appellant, the intention of the appraisal, was it for current market value or was it a retroactive appraisal? Because in the appraisal, when it began, it did say that the appraisal estimate of market value of the property, which the appraisal was done in 2026.
Chairman, so I did reach out to my appraiser that I had hired to do this appraisal. It is for sales in 2025. You had asked yesterday if the appraiser was actually willing to be here and testify. He's here today, and I'm more than happy to invite him up. He did swear in, and he can answer some of these questions on the appraisal. He did actually, last night, I requested that he relook at this and pull in some other comps, and he has sent me a revised appraisal with other comps in it, and I'm more than happy to present those copies to you guys and to the assessor as well. So if that's okay, I wouldn't mind calling him up. And
I'm in favor. Yep.
Thank you.
I like more of the papers, more papers.
With his, and then we can speak on ours. Or
yeah. We'll let him present first. And then
that's fine. I just wanted to make sure.
That's fine. It's my job.
Thank you.
Commissioners, the very first page on there is actually a printout of 15 lot sales in Canyon County for last year. It's kind of amazing to me that you haven't seen these, because apparently there was no other sales for them to be able to use as comps. But there's 15 of them right here. It does have one of the comps that they put in their comp for a the assessor's purposes of the 420,000. You'll see that at the bottom. The average throughout all these 15, the average lot sale is 279,000 within Canyon County. These are lot sales from 3/4 acre all the way up to almost an acre and a half, a little over, well, 1.7 is one of them. And these were just pulled off the MLS. These have nothing to do with my lots. These were pulled directly off the MLS. The rest of the report, I have Mr. Bull here from Bull Realty, and he can speak to how he put his appraisal together and be able to answer any questions that the assessors may have.
Okay. If you would please go through the chair. Does staff have questions directly to the appraiser?
Yeah, I guess my question still stands that I asked. Was the appraisal done for the 2026 year, or was it a retroactive appraisal? Because it was not stated as a retroactive appraisal in your opening page, and typically that is where it's stated.
Yes, actually on page 1 of 6, you don't file that way. But yes, on the land appraisal report, it was actually put marked as a retrospective appraisal with an effective date of 12/15/25, and I did that because it was my understanding this is a 25, not 15 appraisal. So yes, it is a retrospective appraisal. And there's a box marked on the assignment section of the appraisal report.
Chairman, can I ask a question in that space of time that where Holly might be evaluating that?
Okay.
Mr. Kottner, are you saying with this handout here, just confirm for me, there are no lots listed out of these 15? This is a random poll that do not include any lots from Lone Star Ranch.
That's correct. These were actually listed MLS sales that they had access to. These are 15 of the lots that sold last year on the open market.
Thank you. And these are all within Canyon County?
That's correct. They're all within Nampa area. In fact, I think that's really funny that she had mentioned that our comps were 3 to 4 miles away and that they were able to use a comp that was 20 miles away.
And not in Canyon County?
Well, I think it's still in Canyon County, but it was just City of Star on the Canyon County side.
Part of Star is in Canyon County and part of Star isn't. Correct. So some of that active development, thank you for the clarification.
Are you saying all of these in here are
outside the subdivision?
Not in your subdivision?
These ones that I just presented?
Because I know Solano Creek is.
No. This list is the MLS list, yeah. The other one he did pull in, and I'll let him speak to it. He did pull in some other comps outside of the ones that were in my subdivision.
And 2 mile radius?
No, they weren't.
And that was our challenge to get within that 2 mile radius. That's the challenge down there. We found two comps just in the adjacent subdivision. That was the best comparables we could find other than his own. That was our issue with it. With the whole deal.
And Chairman, that we can, depending on where you stand, depends on where you sit or vice versa, but that was my argument that I started with, is that the ability to find comps for that and the lack of prohibition in the IDAPA rules from using comps within an established development that would seem indicative, people don't have to build in your subdivision. People can build somewhere else. People can find a subdivision with deed restrictions or not. So for me, it still presents as an open market, fair choice ability. This supports what I believe is the right decision, and that is to adjust down the proposed assessed value on this because of the scarcity. And these are developments with specificity that are hard to find. I think Mr. Bowl has done a good job pulling an MLS sales sheet that supports the price, the proposed adjusted value on this, of that, and on any medians, like that is an anomaly, in my humble opinion, that bottom number there on 420, I wouldn't be able to count that because it's not consistent with the other ones. So it looks like you've thrown out the high and the low to get the average. Is that right?
No, actually what I did is I didn't limit high and lows. I
okay.
Put out whatever I could find on the MLS between that 0.6 acres to 1.8. And that's what I came up with from that.
So even including the outlier of 420,792.
Right. I included the top of the 420, which as you can see, the next cell closest to that was 335, I believe.
330.
So, I mean, that is definitely an outlier.
Mm-hmm.
That's very apparent, and I did not use that in the revised appraisal.
And where's the 330,000? Where is the location for
it's
that?
The list here.
Right, I can see it. I'm just wondering how far it is in relation to the Lone Star property. Maybe that's on the last page.
It's actually on the 10 Mile and Victory area.
Okay.
So location-wise, it's approximately 8 miles. But again, it's more towards that CUNA area.
Yeah.
Even though it is technically an MLS.
Okay.
Commissioner Van Beek, yeah. We have unequal information. I challenge staff within 2 miles.
Okay.
And so he's admitting, Mr. Bull's admitting that he's 8 miles is not 2 miles. So I wanted to have comparables. And I put that restriction on staff. The protestant is going to have to at least be working within that restriction also.
And Chairman, can I respond to that?
You may.
And from both the protester and the assessor's office, they're having difficulty with that. So then if you can keep it that narrow, but what I heard is if we want to get a pool, we didn't know either. So that was the starting point. But to get a median value, which is allowed in IDAPA, then you have to broaden the pool. Otherwise, you get outliers and skewed data.
I'm not arguing those facts. I'm stating I want to have comparable comps. And I put out the 2 mile rule. If we want to choose to modify that, that's up to the board to do that. But that's under the pretense that we're coming back to today. So the question to staff is, you only have the 2 comps within the 2 miles, or are there additional, or I haven't heard you make a representation one way or the other.
No, sir, we do have a handout.
Yeah, I have a couple of handouts. First off, I'd like to state you can pull comps from all over the county, but you have to remember location, and what is being built in that subdivision. I could pull 1 acre for 100,000 and then another 1 acre for 500,000. So just pulling all the comps at 1 acre is not a reliable source always from throughout the county. And you guys know that because you stated the Star one. Stated yesterday that it was a better location. So I want you to keep that in consideration when we are doing these as well, that just by pulling all the 1 acre lots in the county doesn't, and getting an average does not quantify the valuation of these lots. Also, I did pull out and I gave you guys a handout for Lone Star Ranch. I did a kind of a land to building ratio. I know we didn't have a lot of sales. I did have the one, like you said, in Horizon. Commissioner Van Beek spoke on yesterday. I just wanted to put on the record that one was listed on MLS in an open market. It was listed for $429, and there was 7 days on the market, and it did have an offering price for $425. So it did sell under asking, so it was not an overly priced sale. So they didn't pay above what was asked of the sale. I just like to reiterate that because I still think that it's a good sale. I don't think that it should be thrown out. Another one as well, it was listed in that subdivision in 2025 for $420. It did end up selling the beginning of the year for $390, so it did drop, but I still found that it was kind of backing the $425 sale and saying that it might have sold a little bit less, but it's not at the $290 sale. Or the 280 or whatever the valuation that these guys are wanting that's across the road. And these ones don't have the stipulation. So just wanting to throw that out there, as well as it's kind of like the case before with the rent rates. Just because you ask for something lower and you choose to sell it at that, that's a choice. Doesn't mean that's what the market is showing. We have the market showing higher values and similar lots right across the road. So I just wanted to throw this out. But I did do an analysis for our assessment purposes, because we don't have a lot of sales. I just wanted to show our equitability and our assessments. I gave you the one for Lone Star Ranch. This is one for Horizon. And because we talked of, and because we talked about equitability in assessments, this, I wanted to do this for you guys for kind of a land to building ratio on these. So I put that in there as well as assessment ratio for both of these subdivisions, showing that overall assessed, we're well within range of state statute. We're 97 and 99%. Which is very close to market value, what we have these assessed, these homes, the improved homes assessed at, and they actually sold on the market through MLS listings, as well as the land to building ratios are very similar between the two subdivisions. So if we were to change the value in Lone Star, we would be inequitable to the sales of everyone else. So when I'm setting valuations, we take land sales, and that's a proportion of the overall value, but it's easier to set your land sales. So if you have land sales too high, that's going to put inequitability on landowners. If you have them too low, it's going to put inequitability on your improved parcels. So I have to try to find the equitability in what's actually selling land sales that I have access to. Obviously, I didn't have access to their sales. I'm guessing that in the appraisal, those sales were given to him because they were not on the market. I'm not sure how you got the sales for his subdivision.
Legal closing statements. That's public knowledge.
So, we do what we have. And like I said, I tried to set the values based on what sales I have. And these are the sales that I had. And then we build the buildings on top of those, the improvement, the difference. And that can, because the land itself is a location-based, you know, with your subdivision type, where you're located at, that all comes into play with land values. You can have really nice subs next to not as nice subs. You're not going to pay the same for those two lots. You're going to buy the one probably if you have enough money in the nicer sub, or depending on your income. So it's different markets as well.
I think there's two things. We have two sales. We want to stay in that radius that are out on the fair and open market. We don't know what these lots for sale are on the fair and open market. He's made a business decision to sell them at this rate, and whatever the contracts are with that, that's not our concern. Our concern is to be at fair market value. And as Mike explained, what fair market value is out there, to be open to everyone. So we can, as Holly said, we can go all over this county. I can go into some place in Middleton where it's $1 million an acre. But I'm trying to be in that general range. And our best information is there was two sales right across the way that were in a fair and open market with no restrictions on those sales. His have not been thrown out on the open market. So we don't really know what they would sell for if he just threw them out there. We have no idea. He's telling us that's what they are, but that could be his business decision to do that.
Commissioners, the assessors are essentially saying that unless it hits the MLS, they have no knowledge. There's nothing in Idaho code that states that you can only use the MLS. My legal closing statements are public knowledge. They could get all of my legal closing statements. I have sent them every single one for my subdivision. I've also supplied them my price list for the entire subdivision. That is knowledge. That is knowledge. Just because they aren't put out on the MLS doesn't mean that they're not out on the market. They are. I have my sales agent with me as well, my broker, who meets with clients, and they have this price list when they meet with clients. To be able to build houses in my subdivision. This price list is sent out to every client out there. They know the prices. These guys are, there is enough knowledge out there where they have the knowledge of the prices that I'm selling. They're just refusing to use it. And I'm saying, if you're looking within a 2 mile area, you have my sales right there. They have sales of two lots. One of them's in 2026. It's not even in 2025 in the year. They have one sale in 2025, but they didn't tell you that all the other lots within that subdivision averaged $240,000 on sales. That's in the MLS. That's an average in the MLS of all their lots. One lot sold for $420,000. It is an outlier. It is not our average market. What I'm presenting you with my price list is our average market. Everything that's sold on the MLS is the average market. It's showing you what my average is. My average is that. It's exactly what's shown on the MLS. I'll stand for questions, but I stand where I'm at, showing my value. And I'm telling you, there is no way that Nampa, Idaho, the market in Nampa, Idaho, the housing market in Nampa, Idaho, can sell 1 acre lots for $440,000. It will not happen. You'll get one outlier, but it's not an average. And Idaho Code 63 says they are to determine the median market value. The median. 420 is not a median. 420 is an outlier.
Chairman?
Yes?
Did you provide information that would either refute or support what Mr. Kottner is saying, that the median price for, what is it, Horizon Ridge, that is across the street? Mm-hmm. And not just one sale in 2026. So that would be, I find that to be a good argument, that if we're looking at 2025, the numbers should come from 25. Having one is difficult for me when he's brought 15. So do you have anything on the sales price for 2025 in the Hidden Horizon Ridge?
There was only one in 2025.
But we had more sales, but we were restricted to the 2 mile radius. If we got, I mean, we can go out and find more sales. That's not the problem.
And radius, yeah,
we're trying to determine that market down there.
And I understand what you're saying, but there, that's also, I don't find that helping the argument, because Mr. Kottner is providing information. This is a non-disclosure state. He doesn't have to provide the information. Those aren't my rules, but he chooses to provide the information. And so, again, this goes back to my point that our window of looking at these might be too small, because it's such a niche market on what's happening with construction. I'm also confused, because initially yesterday when this hearing opened, I asked, or I made a statement about the houses versus the lots, and I guess I'm confused, because I was told we were only looking at bare lots, and now we've introduced information that's land values with improvements, but I don't have a breakout of the land values. I have a sale price, so I need to potentially go back to the 101. I find it somewhat convoluted, and I still find that there's an argument to be made that I cannot support that value with the limited information that's been presented, when there's more persuasive information on the other side with a greater scope that supports a lower assessed value.
The comparables that have been presented, we're not sure that they're comparable. We haven't been a chance to look at these, so we're not sure the location of them. They're just, there's a list here that we're not sure of, but to Mr. Kottner's testimony yesterday, he said that he was limiting the construction, the restrictions on these parcels are because he wants to keep them off the open market, because he doesn't want them to see what they, he doesn't want someone to flip them. And flipping them, we are saying that that is the market value that isn't being realized. When he does that, they're not put on the market long enough to decide whether it could be more. He's just determined that's the value.
And I think there's an argument to be made that in the valley, with explosive growth and people protesting, that restricting some of that at some level is beneficial to consumers. So, Chairman, there evidently needs to be a period for the assessor's office to evaluate the information that's been provided by Mr. Kottner. I find that there's enough new information that perhaps having them go back and look at the comps that have been presented by an appraiser could be beneficial. I don't know that we're going to make headway because we're looking at this in real time also.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate all the information that I got. This is quite the learning experience, and as I said yesterday, after the fact, in a sick, twisted way, I think this is kind of fun. So, having said that, we have only seen one comp above the 440. Like, pretty much, other than across the street, where I think the same individual, if I recall correctly, has bought both of them at much higher, it was two different people. Okay. Those are the only things even remotely close that we have looked at the 440. I think Commissioner Van Beek makes a very good point that we have gone from looking at bare land to now land improvement. Part of that was my fault in making a comment about that. So, about the only thing I know right now that I cannot support 440 because we have one sale above 440 and it is in a totally different part of the county. So from what we have been presented, okay? So from what we've been presented. So, where do you want to go from here?
The one thing that I want to have is the comparable comps. And it sounds to me that I restricted staff and Mr. Bull didn't feel any reservation to do just whatever he wanted, and he may have not had the information from yesterday. I'm not being derogatory towards you, sir. I'm just saying I'm needing to have a level playing field, and I don't feel that we do. I hate to say these words, but I think I'm interested in continuing this to have staff look at the comps and whatever area they've chosen to go out in, you can go out into equal. But we are interested in like bare lot value for that type of subdivision, not just handpicking a lot size, not just handpicking square footage. We're looking at comparable development because we are blessed with Mr. Kottner, who has, my personal opinion, above, way above average subdivision. And this is what's being challenged, is to be fair and equitable with that. And so I'm willing to take a little bit more time and have staff relook at this and come back with some more comps.
Chairman?
Because I am uncomfortable with 275. Because I don't believe, in my opinion, if you put restrictions on the deed, it is an arm length. It isn't. And I understand what Mr. Kottner's doing, and I applaud him for doing that because I think he's going to create a really good, high-quality subdivision. So I'm not against what's been presented. Other sales are going to be very hard to find, those that have conditions or restrictions on them, to be apples to apples. Because what we're doing here, so we're going out, what Mr. Bull did. Can you represent that any of those had deed restrictions on those sales?
I did not look at the individual.
It isn't something you would normally do.
Correct.
You'd have to really dig. So, could we agree to continue this till next week?
I have a question, Chairman. So I can tell Commissioner Brooks is thinking, and he usually has some interesting plot twist, and so I'm just asking if he has any additional thoughts. I could support, I'm with him. I don't support the proposed value. I think basing it on one, on an outlier, that's not how I would do business, and I'm not derogatory toward anyone. It just doesn't, there's not enough information there to support doing that. I also believe that if I wanted to buy something and I was at an income level where I could support paying that for a lot, that to me would be a value added because there is a quality in construction and a choice of builders in that. I think there's more than one. Larry Richardson just happens to be one of them. I don't know. I haven't looked at it. But that either has to be looked at as a value added, and there's two different ways to look at it. There's one side that says that's unfair. There's another side of me that says that's really desirable. And to not add value or subtract value for that, or just to subtract value, doesn't make sense to me. I think that we need what's being offered by this builder and other builders that choose to build like that. I don't choose to penalize that effort in Canyon County. So I was giving Commissioner Brooks enough time to.
I would prefer if we can pick a value rather than keep kicking it down the road. Because the problem is we're not going to find these comps that justify.
I do believe that's true.
The only thing I can bring is my actual sales to justify what I'm asking for. I'm willing to try to settle, but, you know.
Yeah. And Chairman, Mr. Cotner, you have a statement on the record that the lot sales for Horizon Ridge are an average of 279. Is that what I heard you say?
I have all of the legal closing statements from the developer for every lot sale on Horizon Ridge. He sent me all of his closing statements. The majority of them were 2023 and 2024.
Okay.
And they went from 215,000 at the lowest to about 250 at the highest. So then average for all of them was 240,000 that he got for all those lots. Then he kept the one for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he resold that at the 425 because he could.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was a resale, someone that he had sold it to for 235. They flipped it earlier this year for 380.
Okay.
So those are the lot sales. And I have copies of all those. I'm more than happy to bring those, but that is 2023 and 2024. So it doesn't have anything. I did not include those because it wasn't 2025. So.
Thank you.
But yes, with being a non-disclosure state, I'm more than happy to disclose all of my lot closings, even if it helps them with getting comps for other subdivisions. I'm more than happy to disclose all that, and they can pull closing statements from the title company as well. I'm more than happy to supply all that if it helps them actually come up with more comps in the future, as well.
And thank you for that. I do think that having a builder supply that price point that looks at what the real sales are, at least for that type. And if we can't find a similar prototype, then I don't know if that's a category by itself. I don't know. We're just charged to evaluate information that's put before us. If you're saying that the average lot sale price is $240,000 across the street,
mm-hmm. In 2023 and 24.
Okay. And so it's my understanding that they can do time adjustments and potentially bring that back? I don't know. I'm just spitballing now.
Since you're having such a good time, what would you like to
do? Not kick the can.
What's your proposal?
Since there's a disparity, I would like to have the two work together and come back to us with a suggested medium, or for them to prove their point of where they're at the 440. Or you got a better idea than that?
Mr. Chairman, I think that was kind of the whole point, was to prove why they were at the 440 already.
But I restricted the appellant has brought others that were completely out of the. I don't feel that we've had a fair discussion today. That's my issue.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Does Mr. Cotner have a counteroffer on a proposed assessed value you said you'd be willing to negotiate. I know you've got a listed price, I think, of $279 on your protest valuation, $269.9, so $270,000 is what you're, is there?
Before you answer, I think that it would be fair for Mr. Kuttner and the assessor's office and the background and not on a public record, go through that and negotiate that like we allow other protestants do that to come to an amenable decision. That would put him in an unfair position that many, many others have had the opportunity to do it in private. So I would, you can choose to answer, but I would just say I would rather let it be a level playing field that others have got to participate in and give you the opportunity to do that too.
Maybe a recess?
We could recess.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
There you go. Thank you, Trent. What do you want, 15 minutes? 30 minutes?
I mean, in all fairness, he just proved our point. He said somebody bought it, flipped it for $380. He just proved our point of what these things are worth. It just came out of his mouth. They just sold one for $380. They bought it for $240 whenever they bought it way back when, and he flipped it for $380. That's, in essence, our argument right there. These lots are worth somewhere in that range.
So
recess to discuss.
Yeah. Chairman, I move that we recess for 20 minutes.
Let's say again.
Motion's been made and seconded to recess for 20 minutes. We will reconvene at 3:05. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. We'll reconvene at 3:05.